one of the biggest problems in financial management, dear brothers and sisters, is extravagance and waste, israf. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam said to one of his companions, "O Ubayd, extravagance or waste brings about poverty, whereas planning brings about affluence." There are two concepts in Islam, israf and tabdhir. Israf means wasting, extravagance, without being wasteful, overspending and living beyond one's means, whereas tabdhir means wasting the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Israf has been condemned in both religious as well as secular aspects of life.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
O children of Adam, attend to your embellishments at every rhyme of prayer, and eat and drink, but don't be extravagant. Surely Allah does not love the extravagant people. Chapter 7, verse 31. Kulu washrabu wa la tusrifu. Inna Allaha la yuhibbul musrifin. Those who waste the blessings that Allah has given to them are described as the brothers of the Satans, Shayateen. Chapter 17, verse 26 to 27. And this wasting should not only be applied to food items, it should be applied to your time management. You're not allowed to waste your life on TV programs and on something called the smartphone, the cell phone that you always have side by side with you, even when you go to your bed. Your cell phone should have a management. You should manage your time with your cell phone. Now, if you use your cell phone as a dictionary, that is all right. You're using your cell phone for research, that is all right. You're using your cell phone for different aspects that you need for your business, your job, whatever, that is all right. That is time management. But if you're wasting your time checking videos after videos, pictures after pictures, liking people, you know, putting those likes, those hearts, you know, those thumbs up in your Instagram or your Facebook or whatever app you have, that is wasting your time. And when you know it, you have spent more than 1 hour on that device or on those apps. That is not acceptable as a Muslim. You should have time management. You should control yourself when you're using those apps and those devices. Now, people sometimes criticize me for not checking my phone, not checking my WhatsApp and the other apps that I have. That is because I'm not linked to my phone all the time. I actually put time to other things, you know. You have families when they gather around a table, when they want to eat, You know, you have them checking their phones, you know, going through their apps. That is unacceptable. Today, unfortunately, in our modern time, we have these issues where families are around one single table and they do not talk to each other. They're busy with their phones. Again, when you gather, when you have a family meeting, when you have a friend meeting, when you are going to friends, put those phones aside and just indulge yourself with a fruitful conversation with your friends and your families. Muslims should manage their lives within their resources, and this cannot be done unless they control their greed. Controlling greed becomes more challenging in this era of consumerism, when we are told to consume all the time, consume, buy more and more, purchase more and more products, and just consume and just waste and destroy our environment, because after all, we are getting everything from the planet Earth or Mother Earth. We are consuming our environment. We are destroying our environment when we consume and we buy and purchase things, devices that we do not need, or we just that we use them for a couple of times, or and then we put them aside in a corner of our house. That is not acceptable. We have to have management, financial management. Do we really need that device? Do we really need that tool? Do we really need that newest product in the market? Or don't we? Don't fall in the ditch of capitalism. Don't fall in the ditch of consumerism. You know, try to challenge yourself. Ask yourself when you enter a mall, a shopping center, ask yourself, do I really need this? Do I really need this? Or is it my nafs that is talking here? Is it my carnal soul that is talking here? So try to control yourself in this era of consumerism, where advertising and marketing tactics incite potential customers to buy an item as new and improved, even if the older model still fulfills their needs. You know, they always try to fool us that if you buy this product, you will be happier, you will have a joyful life. But that is not the case. That is far away from the truth. That's all for this program, dear brothers and sisters, here on For a Better Life on IRIB English Radio. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Is all I need.
All I need.
Is all I need.
Is all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need.
Love is all I need.
Oh.
All I need to be all I need, and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Love is all I need.
In the limelight.
Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing its repeated violations of the company's rules and risk, including the further incitement of violence. Twitter assessed two tweets sent by Trump on Friday morning, 8th of January, as highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021, the company said in a statement. plans for future armed protests are spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, the company warned, including a proposed secondary attack on the U.S. Capitol building and state capitol buildings on 17th of January 2021. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Julia Carrie Wong and Carrie Paul. The piece is titled, Twitter Permanently Suspend Trump's Account to Prevent Further Incitement of Violence. Stay with us for more of Julia Carrie Wong and Carrie Paul's article. Twitter has permanently suspended the account of President Donald Trump, citing his repeated violations of the company's rules and risks, including the further incitement of violence. Twitter assessed two tweets sent by Donald Trump on Friday morning, 8th of January, as highly likely to encourage and inspire people to replicate the criminal acts that took place at the U.S. Capitol building on 6th of January 2021. The company said in a statement, plans for future armed protests are spreading on Twitter and elsewhere, the company warned, including a proposed secondary attack on the U.S. Capitol building and state capitol buildings on 17th of January 2021. Twitter's extraordinary decision to ban Donald Trump's personal account carries pinpointed symbolism for the embattled president, whose use of social media to stoke hatred and fear fueled both his unlikely political rise and his presidency's ignominious end. It comes just 2 days after a mob of Donald Trump supporters violently stormed the U.S. Capitol, wreaking havoc in an attack that has resulted in at least 5 deaths. Even as the rampage continued, Donald Trump tweeted in praise of the rioters, prompting Twitter to temporarily suspend his account, with a warning that any further infractions would lead to a permanent ban from Twitter. On Thursday, 7th of January, Facebook banned Donald Trump from posting on its platforms, at least through to Joe Biden's inauguration on 20th of January, citing the risk of inciting violence, a move that increased pressure on Twitter to finally unplug the erratic president's bullhorn. Other social media companies have scurried to deplatform Donald Trump and his most violent supporters. Google, for example, removed the right-wing social network Parler from its app store, citing the platform's role in inciting violence. Among those calling for Donald Trump's suspension were 350 of Twitter's own employees, according to a report by the Washington Post. In the context of horrific events this week, we made it clear on Wednesday that additional violations of the Twitter rules would potentially result in this very course of action, Twitter said in its statement. Our determination is that the two tweets are likely to inspire others to replicate the violent acts that took place on 6th of January 2021, and that there are multiple indicators that they are being received and understood as encouragement to do so. Twitter's decision was hailed by Donald Trump's critics and lambasted by his remaining supporters. Many civil rights advocates who have long argued that platforms should cease allowing Donald Trump to use their platforms to spread bigotry seized the opportunity to call on Facebook and YouTube to follow suit. On Friday evening, 8th of January, Donald Trump used multiple other Twitter accounts, including the official presidential account at POTUS and his campaign account at Team Trump, in an attempt to tweet his complaints about the ban, but the tweets were quickly taken down. A Twitter spokesperson said that Donald Trump was not allowed to use other accounts to evade his ban, and that the company would continue to remove his tweets. The campaign account at Team Trump was permanently banned from Twitter. Twitter said it would not suspend government accounts such as POTUS or White House, but might limit their use. This is the outcome of years of inaction, said Joanne Donovan, an expert in misinformation and research director at Harvard University's Shorenstein Center. Technology companies have assumed for far too long that their products are neutral, but political elites and the millionaires behind them knew this assumption could be weaponized. This is a major failure of those who built this technology and claimed they could secure it. In a statement that provided unprecedented detail about Twitter's decision-making process, Twitter made it apparent that Donald Trump's months-long campaign of using Twitter to promote and amplify baseless conspiracy theories about the legitimacy of the presidential election had led directly to his suspension. Donald Trump's two final tweets read, "The 75 million great American patriots who voted for me, America First and Make America Great Again, will have a giant voice long into the future. They will not be disrespected or treated unfairly in any way, shape, or form." The second tweet read, "To all those who have asked, I will not be going to the inauguration on 20th of January." While those statements may appear relatively innocuous in comparison to some of Donald Trump's recent heightened rhetoric, Twitter said that the president's most avid and conspiracy-minded followers were not reading them as such during the particularly dangerous time. The decision not to attend the inauguration is being received by a number of his supporters as further confirmation that the election was not legitimate and may serve as encouragement to those potentially considering violent acts that the inauguration would be a safe target as Donald Trump will not be attending, Twitter said in a statement. Additionally, Trump's references to his supporters as American patriots who must not be disrespected or treated unfairly was being interpreted as an endorsement of the rioters and support of those who continue to reject the orderly transition of power. Donald Trump is by no means alone in bearing responsibility for dangerous proliferation of disinformation on Twitter for many months. Though the platform carried out a broad crackdown on accounts and content relating to the QAnon conspiracy theorists in July, it has allowed a host of QAnon influencers to build massive audiences spreading baseless conspiracies on Twitter. Conspiracies about the election and supposed voter fraud in last November's election. Well-known figures such as former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, Trump attorney Sidney Powell, and the 8chan administrator Ron Watkins and attorney Lynn Wood have spent weeks stoking the flames of QAnon-inflected election conspiracy theories on Twitter, with their false allegations reaching both masses of Trump supporters and Donald Trump himself. On Friday, Twitter permanently suspended the accounts of Michael Flynn, Sidney Powell, and Ron Watkins for violating its policy against coordinated harmful activity. Lynn Wood was suspended on Thursday. "We've been clear that we will take strong enforcement action on behavior that has the potential to lead to offline harm, and given the renewed potential for violence surrounding this type of behavior in the coming days, we will permanently suspend accounts that are solely dedicated to sharing QAnon content," a Twitter spokesperson said in a statement.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Aperture.
Being the second largest country in the Middle East, Iran is rich with a colorful bouquet of architectural masterpieces, magnificent mosques, ancient caravanserais, impressive rock tombs, and former royal cities of the ancient Persian Empire. But perhaps Iran's amazing desert landscape has been largely overlooked. I'm Zari Shajeri, and this is Aperture. Iran's deserts are unique in the variety of their composition and surface types. A yardang, or kalut, as they're called in Farsi, is a topographical feature that has been carved out of a surface by the wind. They're most commonly found in deserts where there is a sand supply, which abrades the surface when moved by the wind, and soft sedimentary rocks that the sand easily erodes. Over time, the sand wears down the surface into beautiful streamlined shapes that are aligned with the prevailing sand-moving winds. Iran is famous for mega yardangs in Kerman in the south of the country. Stay with us for this episode of Iran Trotter as we follow Javad to discover the spectacular kaluts in Iran.
To most humans, nature means trees, jungles, rivers, and mountains. But is that all there is to this beautiful nature created by the architect of all beauties? God is limitless. He is infinite and has created nature with infinite beauties. Nature has many and varied complicated aspects, and the natural world in Iran is no exception. Many people do not consider deserts and wastelands as part of nature. But the fact is, deserts constitute a large part of the environment on our planet. All we have to do is open our eyes and look at these countless, peerless beauties. Hi. I'm Javad Gharai. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm traveling to the most pristine areas of my beloved country and uncovering to you its many beauties. This time, I've come to a vast city in Kerman province, a city that in fact forms a major swath of the amazing landscape in Kerman. The fictitious city of Kaluts. I set out on a 110-kilometer walking journey to the northeast of Kerman province to arrive at my main destination. The yardangs are located in an area spanning 11,000 square kilometers in the west of Iran's Lut Desert. The yardangs of Lut cover an area around 150 kilometers long and around 70 kilometers wide. In the words of some researchers, this vast expanse used to be the bed of a lake sometime in the third geological period, and that in fact the yardangs, or the kaluts, are made up of brittle sediments lying at the bottom of that lake. At some point in the third geological period, the lake dried up as a result of the major climatic changes that occurred on Earth. Torrential rains and their ensuing humidity in the following periods and water erosion led to the creation of the kalutes, or yardangs. Other researchers believe the yardangs are the result of the alluvial deposits originating from Birjan Mountains in the distant past. Sharp temperature fluctuations in the lute and the constant blowing of local winds carrying abrasive sediment loads of sandstones battering these yardangs over the years have led to their erosion. Winds that continue to lash out at these yardangs and eventually raise beautiful clay terraces to the ground. Trips to the heart of deserts and wastelands have always been risky, but studying up on such places and the risks involved in traveling to them, not to mention carrying a proper map, a GPS device, and the topographic map of the area you are traveling to, can bring the number of risks involved down to a great extent. In all fairness, one of the most beautiful areas in the Lut Desert is the Shahdad Yardangs of Kerman. I mean, there are few places in the world with such beautiful desert landscape. I think nowhere in the world can you find a landscape as vast as this one. I am in the Lut Yardangs, hoping for a good trip, and I'm positive it's gonna be a thrill. I stepped onto a part of the river that not many people were interested in traveling to for several reasons. The flight distance between the Yardangs and the Yalan Megadunes in the west of Lut is around 150 kilometers. For several consecutive years, part of the Yalan Megadunes was announced by NASA as one of the hottest spots on Earth. This is an area where temperatures run above 70 degrees in the summer. With no trace of life among them, the Yardangs of Lut look scary to human eyes. Although in recent years, some researchers have discovered and registered a number of plants and insect species in them. But at first look, the fictional town of Kalutes or Yardangs bears no trace of life of any kind. Encountering sandstorms in the desert or getting lost in them, or all the other hidden dangers of such terrains, can put your life at grave risk. But none of those reasons stop me from walking right into the Yardangs. You can enjoy spending time in this beautiful natural landscape with enough information on its climate and terrain, and by using a map and GPS device. No one has found any trace of human habitation in the Kalutes area, not in the past and not in the present eras. But on the outskirts of these beautiful Kalutes, there are many remnants of human habitation from years gone by. The Kalutes are located on the outskirts of Shahdad, a city in Kerman that is among the most ancient in Iran, a place with a more than 6,000-year-old culture and history. The world's oldest metal flag was discovered here. The many qanats and water reservoirs on the outskirts of the Kalutes, as well as the lush gardens of Shahdad, are evidence of human settlement in the distant past. Right at the beginning of the route, I came across an area with a concentration of strange Kalut formations, a place famous for its egg-shaped hills.
I have to walk a long distance to get to the heart of the Shaddad Kalus. But the beautiful elevations you see behind me, which is sort of the prelude to the main Kalus, are called the egg-shaped hills, and for good reason. They really do look like eggs, although these hills are considered as little Kalus. The reason they have been abraded more than the other Kalus in this region is rainfalls and, of course, the type of soil they are made from. And if it goes on like this, rainwater and wind are going to destroy them in the not-too-distant future. Every spot you go to in this region, you see new and different Kalus or Yardangs. The majority of those who travel to the Kalus are not aware of the diversity of the landscapes in this terrain and its natural phenomena. But the fact is, the Kalus of Kerman are a peerless kaleidoscope of beautiful desert landscapes. Everywhere you look in this region, you see spectacular yet peculiar sights. Around 7 kilometers after the egg-shaped hills, I arrived at another strange yet interesting scenery. From a distance, I thought I was approaching some prehistoric cemetery. But well, this is not a cemetery. These mounds are called the Dolphin Hills. In fact, they are very small Kalus in the vicinity of the big ones. The dual action of wind abrasion and rainwater has chiseled them to look like dolphins swimming on a wave of dust and sand. Every part of the Kalus in Shaddad has its own unique shape. And these Dolphin Hills are among those unique parts of the Shaddad Kalus. These are really extraordinary, really beautiful. I've been walking around in the Shaddad Kalus for hours now, deep into the heart of these remarkable protuberances. Although it is fall now, and the best season to travel to the Lut Desert, and of course to the Shaddad Kalus, early spring is also a good time. Anyway, it's noontime and very hot. It was very cold in the morning, but now the temperature keeps going up, so I'm going to have to take a layer off. The temperature in the desert fluctuates sharply between the morning and the evening. It's always like that. So you have to remember to pack the right clothes for summer and winter weather. That's what it's like in the desert. You get summer and winter weather at the same time, happening within hours of each other on a single day. You should keep that in mind. It's really getting hot here. I just hope it'll stop right there as we approach noontime. Because, I mean, the sun, the heat from the sun can just be unbearable. Although I've already thought of something for a situation like this, one of the most important things we have to carry with us when traveling through deserts and wastelands are glasses, sunglasses that is. They're very important to protecting your eyes against the scorching sun. When the rays of the sun reach the dirt, they are reflected in your direction and bother your eyes. The air here is very clean. That's why there's so much light. So you have to wear sunglasses if you ever come to a place like this. If you don't, your vision is going to get hurt, and you're going to get wrinkles around your eyes. And that's what the ladies are very sensitive about. Thank you. dazzling beauties of the Kaluz redoubled my enthusiasm for traveling into the heart of these sand formations. But the deeper I walked into them, the more arduous things became. Walking on the sand in the punishing heat requires strenuous effort and drains your energy. The day started out cold, but the temperatures kept going up as I approached midday. The biting autumn cold was nowhere to be felt. Walking on the sand and grit really wears you out after a while, and it makes you sweat a lot too. It's starting to get really hot. I'd better change into something more suitable. I'm wearing a thin layer, but the short sleeves expose my forearms to the sun, and that means sunburn. The sun is just bearing down on me. I feel like it's burning my face. I mean, I really had to change my clothes to avoid getting sunburn on my arms. The sun can get really annoying round about noontime out in the desert, even if it's not very hot. You're bound to get sunburned, so you must wear long-sleeve shirts with good breathability at the same time. I mean, that's what I always do. And I've never run into any problems because long sleeves have always protected my arms against the sun. Now, more important than wearing long-sleeved shirts out in the desert is to have proper headgear, such as this hat. What this hat does is it prevents the radiation from the sun from reaching your head to a great extent, and as a result, your face, neck, and ears won't get burnt. It really feels good when you wear one of these. And of course, a good pair of sunglasses is a must-have in a place like this. But there is another type of glasses, sunglasses, that I carry with me all the time. These are called storm goggles by some and skiing goggles by others. It's important to pack a pair of these goggles too, because when there is a sandstorm, when strong winds start blowing, they kick up a lot of sand and other particles into the air, and the goggles prevent them from going into your eyes. More important than that, you can see where you're going when you're out in the sticks without worrying about sand getting into your eyes. Man, I'm beat. It really wears you out when you walk on sand and up and down on those little hills. It's just fatiguing. I dare say, walking about in the Kaluz area and the hot areas of Lut Desert in the summer is next to impossible. The temperatures are so high and the surface of the earth so hot, you won't last more than a few kilometers. That's a time when you cannot see any living creatures in the Lut Desert. You can only see them during the night. It's very important to carry enough water when you travel to a place like this. If you're going to spend 2, 3, or 4 days trekking in the desert, make sure you have enough water. That's because you sweat a lot and your body loses a lot of water. And obviously, when that happens, you become dehydrated. In addition to that, you have to eat food that contains salt. But if your food doesn't contain enough salt, you need to eat salty nuts. That's because your body loses a lot of sodium as you sweat in the heat, and that's going to harm your body. Okay, now let's eat an orange. The Kaluz expand intermittently from the west of the Lut Desert towards the southeast. The corridors formed among them look in the same direction as the Kaluz themselves, that is, in the direction of the local winds. They are all very brittle. The shape of each Kaluz depends on how it was first formed, its density, and the direction of the winds that brush against it on their paths. Shifting winds and other erosive factors in the Kaluz basin has created a variety of them with different shapes and sizes. In some places, winds have filled the depression around the Kaluz with sand, and in other places, they have blown away the sand from around them. Now, let's take a look at the etymology of the word Kaluz. Kaluz is a blend of two words, Kal and Lut. Together, they mean the city of Lut. In the Khorasan region, in central Iran, and along the coast of the Caspian Sea, the word Kal has taken on different meanings. In Khorasan and Sistan and Baluchistan, it's the root of words such as kalate and kalat. meaning castle or citadel. It could also mean a hamlet or a village perched on an elevation. In the center of Iran, the word Kalat means a walled-off village. The Kaluts are an imaginary city. From a distance, they look like the remains of a ruined city. Of course, there are a few other areas like this in some parts of the world, but the Kaluts of Iran cover the largest such area in the world. Without human interference and technology, Mother Nature has put on display her unique artistic talent and creativity. It was starting to get dark. When on a nature trip, it's important that the nature traveler find the right spot where they can pitch their tent before the dark sets in. That will ensure a good night's rest without any trouble. I'm going to call it a day now, and I think the best place for me to camp out is right here next to a lone Kalut surrounded by sand. The wind has created this hole here as if to prepare it for someone to set up their tent in. This is perfect because here I'll have my back to the wind, which usually blows from the heights of Sirj Mountains back there towards the Kaluts. I mean, that's why this hole has been created. This Kalut hasn't allowed sand to accumulate here, hence the evenly shaped depression around it. It's just the perfect place to camp out. We're spending the night here. It's a great spot, and hopefully we're going to have a star-studded sky above us. Okay, I've been told I wouldn't be able to find any firewood or shrubs or any living creatures because deep in the heart of the Kaluts, the winds are so strong, they won't allow any vegetation to grow on their path. In other words, if a plant grows here, it gets blown away by the wind. But there is an exception to that rule, and that is an area located on the path of floodwaters flowing down to the Kaluts area from the Ravar Mountains. The floods uproot the shrubs on the banks of the rivers nearby, the ones near the Kaluts, that is, and dump them in the seasonal river that's created near here and eventually brings them over to the Kaluts area. I might be able to find something there to make a fire here tonight to keep me and others warm. The temperatures in the Lut Desert fluctuate constantly, making life a bit difficult for nature travelers. Therefore, I always pack warm clothes and a good warm sleeping bag. Another beauty of the desert is its star-studded night sky. In the absence of light pollution, you get a clear view of the twinkling stars and part of the Milky Way. You can spend hours feasting your eyes on those beautiful celestial bodies that adorn the expansive firmament above. I'm glad I found these sticks. It gets really cold out here at night. I rarely make fire during my trips because I set a lot of store by nature and even dry sticks of wood. These sticks are a form of energy. They are no different than oil and gas, so we shouldn't use them recklessly. As I say, I don't make fire when I camp out unless I really have to. Most of the time, I don't need to, and when I do, I make a small one. But in the Lut Desert and in the Shahdad Desert, temperatures fluctuate a lot. I remember coming here 3 years ago. One night, winter was about to come to an end. I mean, like 2 or 3 days to the end of the season, 3 years ago. That night, right here in the Lut Desert, the temperature plunged to -1 degrees. Here's the thing. In the day, at midday I mean, I had traveled deeper into this area and experienced temperatures as high as 43 degrees. That's a huge difference in one single day. It was all very strange to me. But well, that's what deserts are like. It's typical of them. It can get really cold during the night, especially during fall and winter. Therefore, you have to have proper clothes to wear. And if you manage to find a few sticks, you can keep yourself warm and enjoy yourself sitting around a campfire.
spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, He is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره وشيعته. We were discussing some of the main features of the community of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, and I talked last night about truthfulness, and I believe that this is a very important quality of a mu'min and also a Muslim community. Inshallah, I hope by the discussion that we have tonight, it will become crystal clear that truthfulness is very fundamental. It's not like some, for example, other qualities that are necessary, but even without them, you can still say, I am a mu'min, but not a good mu'min. No, without truthfulness, it's very difficult to be counted as mu'min. Now, I want to start a Quranic discussion here about haqq, and inshallah, I mentioned some of the major points. It's such a broad concept and such a far-reaching concept in the Quran. Everything starts and ends with haqq in the Quran. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala praises a group of people, a community who were following Musa alayhi salam because they were truthful, they were observing haqq. Allah praises them. This is the fairness of the Quran. Although before this Allah was criticizing some of them, but when there is a good point, Allah also acknowledges. In Surah A'raf, verse 159, Allah says, وَمِنْ قَوْمِ مُوسَىٰ أُمَّةٌ يَهْدُونَ بِالْحَقِّ وَبِهِ يَعْدِلُونَ. Among the nation of Musa alayhi salam, there is a group, there is an ummah, there is a community, that they guide truthfully. They guide people according to the requirements of truth. They observe truth, they guide people towards the truth. وَبِهِ يَعْدِلُونَ, and they judge and rule also according to the truth. So a community is singled out, is praised by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala when that community is making everything based on the truth. If we decide to do something in the community, or we decide not to do something in the community, it makes no difference whether you make decision to do or not to do, it must all be based on haqq, on truth. Nothing personal should get involved. Nothing selfish should get involved. Everything for the sake of haqq, for the sake of truth. Then, few verses later, Surah A'raf 181, this is 159, 181, Surah A'raf, the same Surah, Allah makes it more general. It says, وَمِمَّنْ خَلَقْنَا أُمَّةٌ يَهْدُونَ بِالْحَقِّ وَبِهِ يَعْدِلُونَ. Among the people that we have created, among our creature, among our creation, there is a group, there is a community that they guide truthfully and they judge and rule truthfully. This is the quality that we should achieve. If someone wants to describe our community, should say, this is a community that runs according to truth, according to haqq. Every decision is based on haqq. Every meeting is based on serving truth. Then in our hadith,
It is mentioned that this actually refers to the Muslim community as well. Because in the previous one it says, وَمِنْ قَوْمِ مُوسَى. And ulama have discussed who are those people in the nation of Musa who had that quality. Allama Tabatabai has a beautiful discussion. He says, either it refers to good people who were guiding in the sense of teaching, or it refers to the prophets of Bani Israel. If we use the concept of Hidayah in the way that Quran uses the concept of Hidayah normally, which needs Isma. I don't have time to go into that discussion. But in verse 181, Allah makes it not limited to the Ummah of Musa. He says, وَمِمَّنْ خَلَقْنَا. It's more general. Then in our hadith, it is said that this refers to Imams and to the Shia.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Abdullah ibn Sanan, he says, I ask Imam Sadiq alayhi salam about this verse, وَمِمَّنْ خَلَقْنَا أُمَّةٌ يَهْدُونَ بِالْحَقِّ وَبِهِ يَعْدِلُونَ. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, هُمُ الْأَئِمَّةِ. These are Imams. So Imams are the leaders of the community that guides and judges truthfully. There is another hadith in Tafsir Ayyashi. Again, the same ayah was asked, and Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said, نَحْنُ هُمْ. We are those people who guide and rule according to the truth. Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam also commented on this ayah, and he said, أَنَا وَشِيعَتِي. Me and my followers are those who guide and rule and judge according to truth. So if we want to be the Shia of Imams, so we have to have this quality. Everything is based on truth. In Durr al-Mansur, which is by Suyuti, the Sunni tafsir, they ask Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam about this ayah. And the hadith says that Rasulullah replied, "Inna min ummati qawman ala al-haq." Among my nation, there is a group of people who are on the truth, on the right path, committed to the truth. Hatta yanzala Isa ibn Maryam mata nazala, till Isa alayhi salam comes in after us. So it means that this community, maybe little, who are 100% committed to the truth, they will be part of the Muslim Ummah, and they will continue till Akhir al-Zaman. So this is a kind of also Bishara, that till that time, always there will be a good group of people. Imam Zaman and people who are his true followers, people who are behind him,
You know, Imam Zaman always has helpers and people who are close to him. This 313 is the number that should be completed before Imam declares his mission. Otherwise, Imam always has some less number of people who help him, and also people who are not close to Imam physically, but they are close in spirit to Imam. They are all over, you know, spread. But what we need is to establish a community which is organized, which is structured based on this quality, so that we can say to Imam, we are at your service. You can count on us. This is something that we have to achieve.
That was the Characters of Shia Community by Hujjatul Islam, Dr. Shomali, and the program, The Spiritual Message of Islam.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe as hard, and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
O Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. O Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Please include us among the best followers of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. Please protect and safeguard our community and our families and our youths from everything that you don't like. O Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. O Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraji, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraji who are alive. O Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana an alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day. Even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
www.parstoday.com/en